Hello, doctor.
Hello.
First of all, I really want to thank you for the fact that you're taking out time and just doing this. Just for the people who will be watching this, can you just introduce yourself a little and tell about yourself?
So my name is Dr. Pankaj Jorwal. I work as associate professor in Department of Medicine at AIIMS, New Delhi. So my interest is basically infectious diseases like tuberculosis, dengue, and fungal infections that we have. And of course, now the ongoing COVID-19. So
Right.
this is what I do, but this is just pretty much whatever I do.
Just off the bat, I'll start with the very like a question jo har aadmi har aurat like soch rahe ki how bad is it? How bad is it really?
So if you tell you, I tell you the exact answer, the answer is nobody knows how bad it is. Actually, a lot of people are trying to contain it, but still it is going on and going from one country, from one continent to another continent. So it's probably very bad as of now in terms of its spread, not in terms of mortality or death, but in terms of the disease being going all over. So it's probably, as you know, it's a pandemic. So it's spread to all parts of the world.
And how far do you think we are to creating something that can be a vaccine or at least contain the effect of this virus?
Again, realistically speaking, making a vaccine requires a lot of processes before the vaccine, like animal trials, then human trials, safety, efficacy. It's always safety first, then the efficacy, because any vaccine has got a lot of side effects, which we might not be aware of. So classically, it requires a lot of time. So in present times, in so much desperate times also, if you want to ask me, really, it probably will take almost a year to a definite vaccine to come out through proper channel as it has come out since in the past. But depending on the circumstances, we might have an earlier vaccine, because if they're on compassion grounds, if they actually bypass certain things which are there, so it maybe. But realistically speaking, it will take around about a year.
What do you think, like, एक infected person on an average अभी कितने लोगों को infect कर रहा है?
Usually, they say when the number crosses 200, which the India has crossed 200. So once it crosses about 200, then it's almost doubles every third day around, because the number of cases have gone out of whatever control you actually had. So whether we are testing or not testing, if we have crossed 200, that means the number is going to increase in the coming days. It's like every second or third day it might increase, depending on the transmission dynamics. It might actually increase drastically, it might not increase that much drastically, but the numbers are going to increase definitely.
Doctor, I'll ask you this very a question that has bothered me since like पिछले 2 हफ्तों में is that in a country like India where our community is so one so densely populated, second बहुत साथ साथ रहते हैं सारे a community it's a very close-knit community. Why do you think the number is so low? Because there has been the first case came really long back and keeping in mind the nature of this virus, which is like it spreads very easily, how do you think the number is low? Is it because we haven't done enough tests? There's not enough testing, or is it because it's that's how it is?
Exactly, we are not sure, because the disease behaves differently in different countries. But there's obviously one of the answers is we are not testing enough that much. That will be an obvious given.
Right.
If you look at the numbers, we are obviously not testing. But then again, if you look at the other side of it, that even if you were testing more, a lot more people, and the numbers were much more, there it won't have actually impacted on the spread of the things. Maybe if we would have tested much more number of them, we could have actually strictly actually enforced the lockdown that we are actually having right now. But even though I think if testing or not testing, eventually the thing is that we will have to go for social isolation, that which is being talked about and which is being done right now.
We'll have
So
to
whether we are testing or not testing, eventually it has to be go through, whether the drug is there, the vaccine is there. The shortest and the straightest thing is you will have to get social isolation, complete lockdown. It has to be done.
And in your मतलब in your perspective, कितना टाइम शुड बी अ मिनिमम सेल्फ आइसोलेशन? लाइक वी हैव अ जनता कर्फ्यू विच इज फॉर 14 आवर्स. like how long do you think should this janta curfew be for this virus to be so that people like you, doctors all over the country, can actually the medical community can actually contain the virus and stop it from just.
So they say the incubation period is 14 days. So once a person is affected, he is infectious for the period of 14 days. Although he becomes symptomatic on the 5th or the 6th day when the symptoms appear. But before also, the person is actually infectious and he might be spreading the disease. They say the pre-prodromal stage, when the person, if you ask the history, they say, they usually give the history, there was some, I was not feeling well since 1 to 2 days. Then eventually the fever started and all. So basically then the person is infectious for that many days. So if you look at the number of cases that we are having, so I would actually say 2 to 3 weeks at least.
So a total isolation lockdown for 2 to 3 weeks will be able to.
It's hard to contain the virus at a certain extent.
Right. So as you mentioned, the symptoms starts showing up on the 5th day, 4th to 5th day. And so what is the 14 day period that we talk about?
So if the person might be positive on the 1st day itself, if you test it, and if the person might be positive on the 14th day itself, so that is the range that we have. Once the virus gets into the body, then the body tries to fend it off, and the body gives a reaction, the immune reaction. So usually that reaction gives rise to the fever that we are talking about. So
fever is a body's mechanism to fight the virus.
To fight the virus.
Right.
So before that also, the virus is there in the body. But the symptoms start showing on the 5th or the 6th day. So basically, you will not be able to catch somebody or you will not be able to pinpoint that this person might be having the disease. Only when he becomes symptomatic, then you can actually say, which is towards the 5th and 6th day. That's why they say that whoever is traveling from outside, because India per se, did not have any cases. So obviously, it is the people who are bringing in. So they have to be home quarantined for a period of 14 days. In between those 14 days, if they become symptomatic, then they need to be isolated and they need to be kept on under observation of medical care. That's okay.
Right. So what I understand from this is that a person can be symptomatic and can be carrying disease within the 14 days.
Yeah.
But
May not be showing symptoms of the disease like fever, sore throat difficulty in breathing.
If he or she is showing symptoms, that means the virus is in his or her body.
That is definitely the virus is there in the body.
So that person is a potential, can spread the disease and he's not being
Definitely. Then at that point of time, he is definitely, he can spread the disease and obviously he is also having the disease.
Right. So can a person be fit? Like, can he be fit? Like someone like me who doesn't have fever or symptoms, but can the virus still be within me? Just because my immunity is strong, it's not maybe showing that bad and it's fighting it off, but can I still contain a virus?
So theoretically saying that is true. If you look at the data, they are saying the younger people are not that much affected. It's the older people who are affected. So if somebody with a good immune system might have a very mild infection, like minor flu, like normal viral fever that year, he might actually have malaise, body ache, so he might be uneasy. Or may person may be asymptomatic also. But that fraction of people will be asymptomatic or will be very less. So they will not be transmitting the disease as so. Even though they can potentially transmit the disease, that's why they say everybody should be home quarantined, whoever is traveling for 14 days. So as to stop the spread of the disease.
Right.
But classically, it's the people who are becoming symptomatic, they are actually spreading the disease. But if you have a good immune system, you might not have that many symptoms. And you might just pass it on as normal viral fever.
Right. But you cannot have the symptoms and theoretically you can still spread it.
But that will be very small function, very, very small fraction of people who might be asymptomatic, who have that much good immune system that they are not actually having any symptoms and all.
Right. Just to add to that question, like a lot of people develop fever, and is it possible for some people to develop fever and not develop the rest of the symptoms? Like some can just cough and some of them can just have a short breath and stuff like that. Is it possible to symptoms to show like a patient to show particular symptoms?
So fever is a universal symptom. Fever you can will find in other any kind of infection that you will have fever, because it is the body's mechanism to fight off infection.
Right.
So it's not common to one symptom, but the other symptoms, like if you have got another different kind of flus going around, like H1N1 is also going around, influenza is going around. So that's what the thing is. There are certain symptoms which are very peculiar or specific to the COVID-19. That is like fever, but then fever, you can have 1,000 causes of fever also. Mm. Apart from fever, it causes a cough, dry cough. And the third symptom is shortness of breath. So these three symptoms are actually classically now are being associated with COVID-19. If you have running nose, sneezing, it can happen in this also. But classically, it's more like a H1N1 infection, which is causing all those symptoms. It tends to go deeper into the lungs, so it produces a cough, which is dry. And then there is a lot of mucus production in the lungs. So the resilience of the lungs is affected. So eventually that will give rise to chest pain, shortness of breath, difficulty in breathing.
And just a curious question, even if someone with good immunity fights this thing off, could this possibly have a long-term effect in their respiratory functioning?
It's too early to say, because we have not reached to a post-COVID-19 era. So after once the pandemic is over and we are able to assess people's lung functioning, and then we can see how much it affects the lungs and how much does it affect the lung, then we will know in exact detail whether how much it affects. But even in younger people also who are having good immunity, if they are being exposed to very high quantum of viral load, that's why they say the personal protective equipment are there, like healthcare workers who are mostly younger people. But if they are being exposed to high quantum of the viral load, and again they are being exposed, so a young person might not be able to fend it off for a long time. So wo bhi bimar ho sakte hain. Like if you look at the recent Italy data also, a lot of healthcare givers were also affected.
Right. So there's a lot of questions around how this actually started, and there are a lot of speculation that comes in. Some say it's started from a wet market in Wuhan. Some say it's a political conspiracy. Some say something else. And there's a lot of conspiracies and questions around this whole topic. As per your information about this, like, where do you think it started from, and what is the situation?
Around Wuhan and nearby area wherever it started, but how it started, that is still a mystery to it. I mean, there's no official clarity on that, how it started. So initially they said it was bats, and then the snake ate the bat, or some, there are different kind of theory which are going around. And like you said, like it's a bio warfare weapon, or it's been released, or it was leaked. But how exactly it spread, nobody's aware actually on the origin of it, where how it started, how it all spread, how it all came into being. Right. What we do know is, like, you have got different types of coronaviruses, which are, most of the coronaviruses are in animals. So there are a lot of like more than 70 types of coronavirus which are transmitting within the animals, bats and other animals going around. Humans have got 6 classical coronaviruses. Like there are different COVID-19, and there are two main examples, like SARS and MERS. SARS happened in 2002 and MERS in 2012. So those are the viruses which causes severe type of illness. Otherwise, you still have had in your lifetime many corona infection, but they are all mild viral fever kind of thing that they cause. So usually we are not so much concerned about it. What happened is this virus has actually mutated from the animal species to the human species. Now, how that has jumped over from the animals to human, that thing is still not clear. But definitely it has jumped over from the animals to the human thing. And as we didn't have any previous immunity or exposure to the virus, so lots of people are getting affected by it.
That's a very interesting point that you bring, Doctor, that we do not have an immunity towards this virus yet, but is it possible for humans to evolve or evolve and have an immunity, if this virus stays for a long while, that we develop an immunity against this virus?
So see, that's what's going to happen in natural course of things, disease or natural course of things, everything. Two or three things will happen, that eventually the virus will spread to all over the world, which it has. And eventually a lot of percentage of the population will be affected. Like presently it is almost like less than 1%, 0.1%. Then it will be 1%, 30%. So when it reaches to a stage of 60% or 70% of your entire population is affected, so then you eventually will and have survived and outlived the virus. So they will actually have, most of the surviving people will have natural immunity to it. So the next time it happens, it won't be that much troublesome for them.
Right. But how likely is to, like, how likely are these viruses like these tend to happen again? Like, how is it that these viruses like SARS happened, Spanish flu happened, MERS happened? Like, one, how is it that these things happen? And how is it that we can contain it going forward in the future? Or is it possible to contain them going forward in the future?
So I think the answer for it, so my approach to that will be balance. That's a very important word, the balance. So we live in a very complex ecosystem, if you look at it. There are ants, there are insects, there are mammals, there are whales, there are elephants. So basically there are a lot of people, and we don't actually understand how they actually interact with each other. So whenever there is one part of the ecosystem or the life or the food chain which is being affected more than the others, so that functioning of that animal per se is affected, whatever function it was given. So once that happens, and then it goes into an uncontrolled mode, because previous the sequence before to that is disturbed, so eventually it will give rise to a spread, which then, so that's why you keep on having these pandemics. So I think it has to be, I mean, I'm not saying anything against vegetarian or non-vegetarian way of life. I think everything has to be balanced. So
there has to be some sort of restriction, or at least foundation that helps maintain the balance that you so talked about.
Yeah.
Right.
So we need to eat healthy. We need to eat cooked food. As much food as we can.
I was just about to come to this topic, is that how can we, like, sitting at home, people who do not yet have it and people who might have it and still are sort of in between, their immunity is fighting it, like, what are those things that people should for sure be eating, doing at home while in quarantine to make sure that they develop enough immunity to fight this virus?
Presently, there's nothing like this, any specific food or food item or anything that you can eat. You can just eat your normal healthy diet that you have, home cooked food, whatever you're having, and the fruits that you're having. So you should just continue with that. The most important thing is social isolation. If you're not coming in contact with somebody who's actually having the virus or somebody who's going to be spreading the virus, so it's highly unlikely that it's going to come to you unless you actually invite it. It's like, if you don't open your door, the virus is not going to come inside. Thankfully, it doesn't happen through the aerosol. If you see.
That's also something that I was about to ask, that the mode of transmission for this virus has been really debated about. Some say it is an airborne virus, while some say it's not an airborne virus. And can we get some clarity over this fact? Like, is it like, if I'm sitting in a room with someone who has coronavirus, am I likely to get coronavirus if he doesn't sneeze or infect something physically?
So that's how it is. The mode of transmission is droplet infection. So the droplets are small kind of flake dew drops that you actually get if somebody coughs or sneezes. So they cannot actually be in the air for a long period of time because they are quite heavy in weight. So they tend to settle down on surfaces. So then that's what they talk about, 1 meter to 2 meter. If you are away from more than 1 meter, so probably those droplets will not reach to you. And then the other thing is when they settle down on different surfaces, so through those fomites, it can actually travel. But classically airborne, that if you speak, even if you exhale, the virus is going to go spread into you. That has not been confirmed yet. There are But still, WHO says you need to be cautious in certain situations. Like for that is for healthcare workers, for doctors. So if you are taking care of those patients, there are lots of procedures that you do. If the person is having too much cough, so and if he's intubated, like if you have to put somebody on the ventilator and if you're intubating it, that times a lot of aerosols might be generated, or if suctioning is done. So those are classical situations. That's why they say if somebody who's taking care of this, then they should wear lots of protective gear that they are wearing. But for classical, for normal person, it's not going to cause any issue if you are sitting with alone, unless you are actually being exposed to droplets. Right. So that's why if you distance yourself, then it is not going to cause any issue to you.
So another thing is that when it's a very questioned thing, because people don't understand if or not they should be buying masks in the first place and using masks. Do masks help people who don't have the virus? And like, do masks help?
No, basically I will go to, I will go through the other side of it. Basically, if somebody discusses, so it obviously looks like a very common sense of question. If I will wear a mask, so the fomites will not come to, or droplets will not come to me, and I will not be affected. But the thing is, ideally the mask should be worn by people who are affected, because those are the source of infection. Well, it's not, I'm not blaming everybody, but they are having infection, so they are spreading infection. So if you stop the source, then it's going to be more effective rather than everybody wearing masks. And the other thing which I'm going to come to it, like there is skill scarcity of masks in even the most developed countries in the world, like US, Italy, you can actually say. So masks are required by the healthcare people who, like I was just talking about, who are going to be in actual contact. And that is unavoidable, because they will have to take care of those people. So they will require lots of those masks. So if we will consume all those masks, which we don't require, so that is going to create a scarcity for those people. And if you want to stop the spread of infection, you need to actually make the person who is infected wear the masks, rather than everybody wearing and going around with those masks.
Right. So how do you think, what should be the adequate response from the establishment and the government? Because as far as I know, there are currently 72 branches that are, the 72 labs that are functioning in the whole country, which is that there is one lab for 1,80,055,556 people in this country. Uh-huh. So like, as far as I know, there hasn't been any privatization of these laboratories, and all the laboratories are government-led laboratories. So what do you think
That was the case a couple of days ago. I think that previously we had only 72 labs, and it was all being decided by whatever the agencies are having, like ICMR, they were actually doing those random samplings. And as of now, they said there's no community spread happening. So that's why they had. But you have to understand, it's a very dynamic situation. As and when the need comes, the government has opened up. So I think if you look at it, recent developments, they have actually opened up the private labs to actually conduct those. And there is a list of labs which can actually conduct these tests. State-wise list is there. So obviously, we will need to open more and more, as much tests as we can. So
Do you think the privatization of this the testing will help?
Definitely it will help, because then obviously if you test more, you will get more number of people who are affected. So we can actually catch hold of people who are actually affected and who are spreading it. And classically also, if you look at it, if I tell 100 people that you have to be isolated and stay at home, so the seriousness with which it is, like, obviously the Prime Minister has said, so people have actually taken it very much seriously. But so as much as you can tell them, it's not going to make that much effect, unless somebody is given in black and white, like you are positive and then you should be contain yourself and your family should stay like that. Definitely there is a virus going around and we should be in our homes rather than spread. Because there are a lot of people who are still going around and who are actually thinking that this is again a conspiracy theory, or it's not that much serious, or it's not. Because the situation is actually very serious, as critical as it is.
After like the conversation that we've had, we both of us have like I personally have a lot of context over this the situation we're in right now. So like how long till we get back to a normal functioning society that we were, in the sense that we can go to work and businesses can run? Because honestly, there's the economic impact in the existing economy is going to be terrible. So when do you think can we as a community get back to working and stuff like that?
So that's a difficult question to answer right now. I mean, realistically speaking, at least 2 to 3 months will be there once it blows over. The most of the things have actually happened in our country. And after that, we can actually assess here what is the status. Like if you look at China also, they actually reported once, twice they had nil cases, zero cases reported. But day before yesterday, they had actually 40 cases reported.
Yep.
So the virus is there, it is being spreading, and then it is circulating here and there. So classically, we don't know how long it is going to last, but at least if you can put a minimum number of how long the effects are going to be there, or how long we need to be strict about our going around. So I will actually say it will last about 2 to 3 months at least before we open up again and we actually are able to function normally as we were before.
Right. Also, doctor, do you think so as people develop fever, do you think taking antibiotics right now would be a good choice, or should they get first of all, like, because fever ki antibiotics, I think Indian moms are pretty equipped with antibiotics as of now. So is it a good choice to have antibiotics if you have fever, or like how should one go about if they have fever?
It's never a good choice to take an antibiotic without any proper prescription.
Right.
So if you have a fever and if you're actually having symptoms, then you actually show it to a doctor that nearest. And if he thinks or if he prescribes antibiotics or whatever medicines they prescribe, then we should follow them. Because fever can have a lot of thousand reasons. There might be fever. So we need to evaluate it. What happens? If it is just a normal viral fever, he might give you only paracetamol. If he thinks there is some infection somewhere, even tonsillitis might be there. So then that requires antibiotics. So right. Indiscriminate use of antibiotics will again increase antibiotic resistance. That is another issue that we are facing, or we are going to face in the coming days.
What do you think, what in your view is the biggest threat that we face as a society, and something that can easily make us end up like Italy or Germany? What do you think is the biggest threat?
So obviously the biggest threat is this spreading to each and every part of the country in a very massive way, and eventually overhauling the healthcare system we have. As you say, we don't have that much developed healthcare system and economy like others, Italy and Germany. And even those countries are being swamped. I mean, they don't have masks, they don't have enough ventilators to put people on. So if you compare to it, our number of ventilators, our number of PPEs are almost 1/10 to that. And our number of people are actually more than twice or thrice or 10 times of their population.
Right.
So if it goes into the community, like it's spread in Italy, so eventually, if you really look at it, there is even if present, going by the present stats, the rate is almost 2%, the mortality rate is like on 102 right. people are going. So even if you think of the one way of looking at it, is it's only 2% people rather than the other way of looking at it. If you have 130 billion people, so if you actually 2% of you can actually calculate how big that number is going to
yep.
be. A lot of them, and that 2% will be there, but the 5% will be severely ill, which will need definite ventilatory care or critical care. So those, so that ki in 2% say 8% na ho. And probably I think that's the biggest threat we face right now, that we need to contain it, because we absolutely don't have that much number to actually entertain people if it spreads in the community.
So we need an immediate upgrade in the, I think, the medical sector, which you're talking about, and like just people being ready, not just people, but infrastructure being ready and the resources being ready to treat as and when the operations, the patients come. Right.
Yes. Immediately urgent, almost the most urgent requirement will be to actually increase social isolation, quarantine, whatever, lockdown, whatever we can do, so that we can actually contain the present spread. Then obviously we can actually increase the healthcare.
Right.
Budget, and also that we can have more equipment and
Right. Doctor, another interesting stat that I came across was a comparison between Germany and Italy, and how even though the spike in their cases was very similar, the growth was very similar, the number of deaths, the percentage of number of deaths in Germany is way, way, way less than the number of deaths in Italy. I will just have to once read to you the exact stats. So just give me 1 second. So I'm not wrong with the stats, at least. So out of 53,500 cases, the total deaths in Italy have been approximately 5,000, which is approximately 10% of the deaths. While in Germany, out of 22,000 cases, there have only been 84 deaths, which is a drastic difference. What do you think? Is it like, because there surely has to be something, a manual factor to this whole thing, because the difference is quite drastic. Do you think it's something on an organizational level, on authoritarian level, which is like some government strategy, if you're aware of that, or is it like the people have different health diets or stuff like that? Because this surely is something that is quite interesting. Is it because Germany has been doing a lot of I think testing and they've controlled it? Like, I am not sure. I have no idea. That's why I'll ask you this.
So, I mean, how a country responds to a certain kind of virus is like how a body responds to certain kind of viruses. So, we could not be able to pinpoint, because there are a lot of factors which go into it. But obviously, one thing that we have to mind on, I'm not aware what percentage of Germans are above 60 or above 50. So one thing which I came across was Italy has a lot of, I think they have the second largest oldest population in the world after Japan, I think they had.
Right.
So that might be a contributory factor, because they had a lot of people who are towards cross after 50, like 60, 70, 80 years old. And the virus is affecting most of the older, elderly people. So that might be possible. Other thing might be the natural immune system. Because of their diets and all, they might be having certain kind of immunity to the virus. But exactly to pinpoint why Germany is not, like India is also not actually having, presently, touch wood, we are not having that many death rates right now. So it might be environment related, temperature related. Some people say there is a debate about temperature, whether it
What is your view on that, on the temperature bit?
So obviously, if you look at the theory of it, it does not survive of more than 30 degrees Celsius. After 25, it becomes destabilized, so it will not be able to spread. But person to person spread. So like, if I cough a droplet out and if you inhale it, so nobody is going to do it. I mean, it's not going to get inhibited by that much amount of time. Obviously, the secondary spread, the fomites, suppose somebody coughs it and it's there out there in the open, and it won't last much if their temperature is high. So that way, we are actually hoping on it, that way it won't spread too much. Like in certain places, it might have spread, like somebody coughed and touched the doorknob and the second person came and touched it. So if it is there out there in sunlight and if the temperatures are high, it won't affect that much. But that, there is another cases of Singapore and Bombay at all, the temperatures are high where people are having it. So I think does not affect the person to person transmission, but obviously secondary, tertiary, third, uske baad jo transmission hota hai, that might get affected. So that's one of ways of looking at it, that it will not spread secondary. Third wave, says other way of looking at it, everybody will get affected and then we'll have immunity. And obviously another way of looking at it, definitely we might have a vaccine coming up, which
seems to be a little unlikely right now in the short, in the coming near future.
I mean, all of these will go hand in hand. It will spread to some extent, so some part of the population will be immune to it. It will not go to the temperature related areas, so that might be helping us. And then the people will be affected and they will develop immunity to it.
Right.
And so on and so forth until the vaccine comes, whenever, as and when it comes.
Right. And Just one last thing, since you mentioned that after 200, according to the stats, every third day the number doubles, which
has been the trend that we have seen in other countries.
Right. So, I mean, this doubling effect. So it's basically like every delay in every third day, or delay in every third day, means that we're doubling the risk every day. So it becomes
doubling the load of the virus, which is being spread in the community. So that's why if you're talking about lockdown tomorrow, we should have actually locked down day before yesterday.
Right.
So it's already late on that.
Right. And I don't think people understand that it's not 2x, it's x squared, right?
Yeah, it's x squared. It's not 2x.
It's not 2x.
It's just double the amount of people that will be affected. Right. And then it goes on as if, until and unless you break it.
Right.
So we need to
doubling effect. I came across this concept by Hans Rosling, and he was talking about he was one of the doctors who was posted in Sierra Leone while the Ebola outbreak was happening, and he explained this concept of how the outbreak happened. And coming back to this whole thing, anything else that you'd like to add, or is there something that might be on top of your head that we might not have covered?
Nothing. I think we have covered pretty much the basics. I think we need to actually increase the awareness in general public as much as we can, that we need to actually keep ourselves limited to our homes unless there is an urgent, dire emergency. Hmm. And obviously, we need to actually practice hand hygiene. I think it has been said in everywhere that you need to actually, once if you have to go out and you come back, you need to wash your hands, you need to wash your face. Even with just soap and water is sufficient. There's no need to go for fancy hand rubs or 70% alcohol or masks.
If you're at home, you don't need sanitizers. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you just need to. If you're at home, you're doing your work, you don't need to do anything. Nobody's coming into your home. You're not going there. If you're going out, whenever you come back, you need to actually wash your hands with soap and water. That is enough. That is all that is required. It's a very simple virus. It's right. Just the people who are not actually practicing it, it's just making it complex.
Right. I think that will be it for me. I hope I haven't missed something which I was thinking about last night or last night, but that's pretty much going to be it. And thank you so much, Doctor, for your time. And I really, really appreciate this, that you sitting down and doing this with me.
Thank you, Vishnu. Thank you very much for this. Unfortunately, we couldn't do it earlier because you see, the situation was changing day in, day out. So we're pretty busy with it. Hopefully, we can do it sometime again when the pandemic is not there.
Absolutely. I'd love to have you in the studio and we can talk about this properly with chai and biscuits. Yo, first things first, thanks a lot for watching this podcast on YouTube, if you watched it on YouTube, and listening to it if you're listening it on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or Spotify. If you're listening it there, just please make sure to give it 5 stars so the podcast is, well rated. I don't know what it is. Or if you're watching it on YouTube, please do make sure to like and hit the subscribe button, and do make sure to follow the podcast as well. If you want more podcasts like these, and if you want it on a particular subject, please feel free to reach out to me on my Instagram, which is @TheVishnuKaushal, or just comment down below. The comments are the best way for me to know what you want exactly. So that's going to be it. Now I'm going to play a clip of something that Dr. Pankaj wanted to convey and say to you. So, 3, 2, 1, now.
So, I'm Dr. Pankaj from AIIMS New Delhi. So, I will just like to say that we are in midst of a pandemic. So, but there's no need to be panicky about it or create panic or havoc about it. We just need to stay in our home for a few days and practice hand washing. I think that's the simplest and the straightest way to tackle this virus. That's all from my side.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much.